From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Tonight, our movement sent a clear message to the establishment and the political elites. We will not be ignored. We will take back our government from the political elites and the failed establishment from both parties. And when we win, Springfield will stop trying to control people's lives and start working to make them better. Are we better off than we were 4 years ago? We're worse.
Too extreme for Illinois, that's what Darren Bailey is, but this is somebody whose views are so out of the mainstream, right? Someone who believes in the big lies, someone who thinks that people were simply protesting on January 6th, not engaging in what we know they were, an insurrection. People died as a result of that.
The November matchups in Illinois politics are set. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker will face Republican State Senator Darren Bailey in the governor's race. We'll look at that and more as we recap the primary on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and he's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House Editor, and always good to have our guest back with us this week. It's Amanda Vinicky of WTTW's Chicago Tonight, and Amanda, thanks for joining us once again.
I always love being on the radio with you, Sean, Charlie, and Hannah.
Well, especially Hannah and Amanda, I know you both covered a lot of the politics leading up to the primary and, of course, election night as well. Amanda, I'll go to you first. What's the big takeaway from this week?
The big takeaway from this week is, of course, the matchup that we now have settled between Pritzker in his bid for a second term and Republican candidate for governor Darren Bailey. That is the marquee race, really. I think there's, of course, a lot of takeaways from what you see coming out of this, frankly, very different primary where, you know, held in June, coming off the heels, sort of, we're still, of course, in a pandemic, but a strange place. So there's a lot. I think that there's the gubernatorial matchup, but also when you look at just trends in terms of who voters chose to put forward, both for Congress and state legislative races, that. And again, Bailey is an indication of this, really a changed Republican Party in the state of Illinois, it appears, as well as the hollowing out in general, is one columnist, Greg Hines of Crane's put it, of the center. And really both parties in many of the contested races choosing to go to the hard left or to the hard right. The moderates really did not fare all that well here, nor did some of the candidates that had been backed by legislative leaders, which is something that those who closely follow politics, that's part of the gig, right? That part of it is boosting the incumbents and protecting them. And we saw in many of the hot contests where you had true competition for sitting legislators, that they did not fare that well.
Now, Hannah, your thoughts on it?
I mean, we're kind of entering a new era in Illinois politics. It's hard to understate we're not going to go back to where we've been. And, you know, where we've been is a very productive legislature, one of the most productive legislatures in the country. And that's based a lot on the fact that, there had been, a decent amount of moderates on both, the Republican side and the Democratic side, at least until very recent years. And a lot of that had to do with, House Speaker Mike Madigan and the, as we've talked about lots of times before, the territory that moderate Republicans had always had in the Chicago suburbs. But, that has begun to shift in the last few election cycles as the appetite for moderate Republicans within their own party has disappeared. Republican power has shifted downstate. And then in those, longstanding GOP strongholds in the suburbs, especially that all important voting block of, even though I don't really like to use the term voting block, but suburban women have you know, switched to voting for Democrats for the most part. And, you know, the Democrats who have really broken through, and we saw this again on election night, are progressives. Like Amanda said, we saw those who had been backed by legislative leaders, including incumbents. And, you know, we can talk about this a little bit more later, but we saw losses of, I'm thinking specifically of State Representative Mike Zaleski from Riverside, who is, of course, the son of longtime Chicago alderman, now, of course, embroiled in this ComEd bribery scandal. Longtime Chicago alderman turned ComEd lobbyist Mike Zaleski Sr. You know, Mike Zaleski has been a very active member of the legislature for more than a decade, and to see him go down on election night to a progressive who sought to take him on based on calling him anti-choice, based solely on the fact that Zaleski didn't vote to repeal the Parental Notification of Abortion Act in the fall. I mean, again, it's kind of where we are going. And so new era in Illinois politics, like something that we've not seen before. And it's a little bit sad because in my estimation, at least, we're going to be like other state legislatures now. I feel like we've lost a little bit of what makes us special.
Yeah. So Charlie Hanna says this is a unique time in Illinois politics. You've covered a lot of elections, watched a lot of elections. What do you think about this?
Well, it seems to me that there's been long-range demographic and employment changes that have taken place. And the demographics include the fact that the suburbs, DuPage County, is not as, quote, lily white, close quote, as it was when I started as a reporter. And the presence of Hispanic Americans especially has changed some of the districts that once upon a time were safely Republican are now swing districts or safely Democrat. Same thing in the South suburbs. Once upon a time, they were solidly Republican. Now they're solidly Democrat. And a part of it is because the Black community has moved down into the South suburbs from the South side of Chicago, and on the West side, the same thing. Black folks have moved out into some of the nearby suburbs and turned them into safe Democratic. On the other hand, downstate, the union jobs that once were associated with coal mines and manufacturing plants are kind of gone now to a large extent, leaving basically the cliche, the small town rural shopkeeper, who traditionally were Republican, and the Democrats down there, the union guys who tended to be socially conservative, but very much with the Democratic agenda in terms of protecting laborers and family, they've kind of disappeared. And so we've really seen Illinois go from the kind of state that could elect a Dick Ogilvie or a Jim Thompson or a Jim Egger or George Ryan or Judy Bar Topinka. Now it's the kind of state where Republicans have a guy like Darren Bailey leading their ticket. And I would be absolutely floored if Darren Bailey were to be elected governor. I just don't see it in the cards. And I think part of the problem for Republicans is having Bailey near the top of the ticket could be a real drag on the rest of the ticket going down. So we'll have to wait and see. But as I say, I don't think it's a good day for the Republicans. But I would add, I don't think I agree with Hanna that the legislature won't be able to get much done. I think we've gotten a lot done with Democrats basically doing it themselves. And they had some help on things like the infrastructure package. They had Republican support for that. Not many, but a few. And some of those people got dinged for it in the primary, but they survived. And so I think there are still, what would you say, kind of old school type Republicans. I look in our area,
really, many didn't survive, I think is really part of this. And Darren Bailey, who's now the figurehead of the GOP, wants that to change. So I think that's part of what we'll be watching. Can they still get things done? Yes, because if trends hold, Democrats will still dominate the legislature and will pass legislation, regardless of Republican opposition to it. But will you see going forward the sort of deals, such as an infrastructure package, where you saw some Republicans join in because they said, we want to do this and there needs to be a way to pay for it? Bailey has continually said he believes that was wrong of the party, that the GOP leadership has thrown its voters and its base under the rug, and he's seeking to change that. So that's where I see all of this is things to watch. And is it because of demographic trends? That's part of it. Is it because I think there are pockets of Illinois, clearly we saw with Bailey's success and that of Congresswoman Mary Miller, that a lot of Republican primary voters really, really like Trump. That's the difference. It's primary voters versus a general electorate. Is it that you have people who might have leaned Republican once upon a time, but it's that they don't associate with the new brand of Republican, the Bailey, the Trump brand? It really is something to watch. I think, again, one of the major takeaways, it is the top of the ballot races, but it is the sort of polarization of politics that we have seen and the partisanship that has been a hallmark of DC. And always, of course, you're gonna have, it's parties, it's politics, but that coming to Illinois in a way that it hadn't previously.
Yeah, I guess I look at it in central Illinois, there were a couple of legislators who, I guess, in terms of Republicans these days would be moderate, who were challenged from right-wing Trumpers and still won. Senator Steve McClure, Representative Tim Butler. So in my mind, I see those as kind of the hope for the Republican Party going forward, if it wants to be relevant in Illinois.
Because you also saw losses as well. I'm thinking, you know, David Welter. Again, we look at Congress, Rodney Davis versus Miller. It's a mixed bag.
Hannah, yeah. I guess we had talked on this show now for several weeks about Darren Bailey, the poll showing that he was the likely candidate to come out on top with this, at least according to the polling. But I was surprised, I think a lot of people were surprised, at the magnitude of his victory, of how much he polled in that primary. And, you know, what do we take away from that fact, that he was able to outdistance everybody else, including Richard Ervin, who most people figured to be the moderate in the race?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Richard Ervin, I haven't looked at any updated vote totals in a day or two. But the last I looked, with most votes counted on election night, he was, got 17% of the vote, which means that Ken Griffin spent handsomely on each of those votes, I think, to the tune of more than $800 each, which is just wild. Yeah, the margin by which Darren Bailey won the GOP nomination, I think, shocked everyone. Again, the win was not shocking given the polling that we had seen beginning 2 weeks before Election Day. But I think it tells a few stories. I think it tells, like I've said in the show a few times, it is difficult to poll Republican voters. And we don't talk about that enough. It's difficult to pull them for a few reasons. It's difficult to identify them, and it's difficult sometimes to get them to open up about the reasons that they might prefer a specific candidate, including the fact that, that this is a little bit too much to get into on the show, but, political psychology and the field of behavioral economics tells us that a lot of times people don't really know the reason that they connect with a certain particular candidate, or they feel a certain way on the issue, because, their brain will make a snap decision based on lots of factors, but then the other part of the brain that is more conditioned to having to think in logic and reason and words will actually compensate by trying to make up reasons that, may or may not be 100% true. And this is not someone lying. This is just how your brain works when you're trying to figure out how you feel about an issue and why you feel that way. It's not always going to be 100% accurate. And then also, this is the story of folks seeing poll numbers and that being kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so folks want to get behind the person that they think is going to win because they see the ultimate goal as beating J.B. Pritzker. Now, of course, in Illinois, we know that our electoral history and also recent poll numbers bear this out, that Darren Bailey is not the candidate, you know, that is likely to beat J.B. Pritzker. In fact, J.B. Pritzker spent handsomely, him and the Democratic Governors Association spent handsomely to assure that he would be facing Darren Bailey in the general election. But like Amanda said, this is Republican voters in Illinois making their choice, and it's a new kind of era of Republican empowerment. And again, going back to what I said about it being difficult to pull Republicans, especially in these last, you know, 7-8 years since Donald Trump emerged, a lot of the Donald Trump MAGA coalition is folks who previously really had not been that politically active, maybe never even voted before.
I think wanting to jump in here, there of course is low voter turnout. And again, this gets back to the notion of who votes in primaries and who is making these decisions to put forward candidates in the general election. And are people that aren't particularly partisan, politically involved, that may cast a ballot in November, not wanting to get in there or feeling dissatisfied with their choices. I frankly wasn't all that blown over by Bailey's success. He ran a hard-fought campaign, visited per his campaign. I wasn't there for all of it, but personal goal, I don't know if I'll ever achieve it, visited all 102 of Illinois' counties. Had an energized base, not just due to Trump, regardless of the president's visit. People really backed him, and he got a lot of attention due to his beliefs on COVID that I think a lot of people, big fans of how Pritzker handled it. There's people who are equally as agitated about that and were looking to bring out those frustrations with Bailey. And I think part of it also is Irvin didn't run a good campaign. Yeah, he just didn't.
Charlie, I think you touched on that with it came to Irvin, not really being upfront about what his positions were. And you have to give Bailey credit, whether you agree with him or not. He was out there telling people what he believed.
Oh, yeah, there was no doubt in anyone's mind what Darren Bailey believed in. As a matter of fact, I think Governor Pritzker, in an interview with one of the St. Louis stations, I think it was Mark Maxwell, did the interview, said how he respected Bailey for having these beliefs, Bailey and his wife, and for being very clear what they believe in, and he respected that. He doesn't agree with her beliefs, obviously. But Bailey was totally sincere, and Irvin came off as kind of wobbly and weaving and dodging. He wouldn't answer questions. And part of it was the people who ran his campaigns, his handlers, were looking ahead to November, and they figured, well, with all of Griffin's money, we'll be able to blow everybody else out of the water. And what we want to do is we want to keep the base kind of happy, but we don't want to have to go to the base, the Trumpers, in such a way that it'll poison us for November, because we want, after the primary, we want to be able to shift back and be moderate. And he had a lot of baggage that really didn't help in a Republican primary. The fact that he had praised J.B. Pritzker at one point, the fact that he had said Black Lives Matter at another point, the fact that he wouldn't say who he voted for.
It wasn't a miscalculation, per se, in my opinion, to be looking forward to the general. It was just poorly executed in terms of how it was handled, particularly by attacking the other candidates for being somehow not Republican enough and not supporting Trump. That brought his own issues, Irvin's, that is, to the forefront. And I think you can't ignore also that the Democrats, who were very involved in this race as in boosting, really trying to ensure that they wouldn't have to take on Irvin. And instead, and frankly, also the Attorney General's race, some money was spent to elevate Tom DeVore and bring up his name ID and sort of get him out there as conservative, as we've been talking about things that help in a primary that might not so in a general election. So you saw Democrats getting involved there, which is really interesting. I mean, in a way, Pritzker has the money to do it. This is something that we're seeing it sort of become a playbook for Democrats nationwide. That Pritzker, however, in my interview with him, sort of denied it. He said, "What? I'm just doing a general election. This isn't getting involved in that," which I don't think that that is, that may be true, but that is not exclusively the case. This was very clearly Democrats trying to select their opposition in order to help to guarantee them victory in November. And it was a bet that thus far worked. Money very well spent. It does, however, I think contribute, and there's sort of a, could this backfire? One, if Bailey were to succeed, it would very much allow all that Democrats have used their power to put in place to fall. And so that's a risk. And also one could argue, is this getting into the sort of dirty politics in a new era of politics that we hadn't seen? And what does that mean for just democracy in general? Yeah. When again, you get to the polarization of the country and what impact will that have as we see it play out in states like ours?
Well, just a few.
Well, I would say that this is not the first time that a party has, quote, meddled in another party's
primary.
No,
but to this degree, Charlie,
not
you've been around.
Degree, not this amount of money.
Yeah.
Nobody's
and
had that amount of money.
It's going to be that way going forward. Yeah.
Well, let me, we do
and,
have just
and,
a.
And where I put together the Republican slate, I would not have had Richard Urban as the candidate for governor. I would put Tom Demmer in there, Demmer and Bourne. And Demmer won his primary uncontested. And instead of Millhiser running for Secretary of State, where he got beat, he's a judge, former prosecutor. I would run him for Attorney General, which would have made more sense. Instead, you wind up with DeVore for Attorney General. And I would be, again, I would be flabbergasted if DeVore actually won.
We're just a few minutes here left, and we're going to be talking, of course, about this governor's race over the next 4 months and other races as well. But I did want to touch on some of the election night results that we saw. Hannah, real quick on the statewides, at least, right at the very top of the ticket is going to be a battle for the U.S. Senate. Tammy Duckworth, Kathy Salvey, any big surprise there that she was able to pull that out, Salvey?
She has kind of an established name. Peggy Hubbard was the other person, I guess her and Bobby Piton, I think is how you pronounce his name. Those two were pretty far extreme. Peggy Hubbard is a cop from the Metro East who was present on January 6th. And, you know, so I think Kathy Salvey being the GOP standard bearer, at least Republicans don't have, you know, have to deal with, you know, an extremist at the top of the ticket while they're also trying to you know, focus on a lot of other things going on in their races. But, you know, going from there, we also saw, you know, Ken Griffin didn't lose all of the slate of folks that he had put up and paid for. Tom Demmer, as Amanda just mentioned, who is currently a state legislator, he will be the Republican nominee for state treasurer. And then Shannon Teresi, she is the current auditor for McHenry County. She will be the Republican nominee for comptroller. Whether or not either of them will be able to best their Democratic opponents remains to be seen. I feel like Tom Demmer might have the best chance of that. And then in the Secretary of State's race on the Republican side, we saw Dan Brady, a longtime state legislator from Bloomington. He won his race against John Millhiser, a former U.S. attorney, who was put up on that Griffin slate. Dan Brady was, you know, he made no bones about the fact that he was irritated that he was not chosen to be part of that slate. And so, you know, he ran a hard-fought campaign and he won. And then he will go and face Alexi Janulis, who bested Anna Valencia in the race for Democratic nominee for Secretary of State. And, you know, I think a few people I saw saying that if it weren't for the Richard Urban, Ken Griffin loss, you know, Alexi Janulis's political comeback might have been the story of the night. You know, Alexi had been state treasurer and then ran for U.S. Senate in 2010, lost to Mark Kirk in a very ugly battle that brought out a lot of, you know, family scars with his family's own bank and, you know, the business that they allegedly did with folks with mob connections. And, you know, basically Alexei took a whole decade off of politics. And when he returned last year, it was a big question mark about whether he'd be able to pull it off. And certainly there was a lot of mudslinging between him and Anna Valencia in this primary race. And we'll see how much of that will follow him into the general election.
Okay. Well, let's go to our notes from the field. And Amanda, let's start with you.
All right. I actually am going to try and sail through a few. Number one, something else that we'll be watching is what is going on with the Democratic Party of Illinois. Governor Pritzker getting involved in some Democratic State Central Committee races. When I spoke with him on Wednesday, he really seemed to not be backing Robin Kelly. He had a press conference on Thursday where he did say he supports Kelly, current leader of the Democratic Party of Illinois, but just that he has some concerns given fundraising limitations because she is a member of Congress. We also didn't touch on, of course, what went on in Washington, D.C. with those January 6th hearings that once again spotlighted outgoing Congressman Adam McKinzinger. He did go out, and it was interesting to watch him making some late night TV news on the Colbert Report. And finally, also Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch is not the only Welch who holds elected office in Illinois. His wife won a contested primary for a judicial race. Of course, she still has to go forward in the general election, but given that district, it does seem as if her odds are good.
Okay. Hannah?
Well, today is July 1st, which marks the fiscal new year, which also marks the start of a bit of quote unquote tax relief in Illinois. We talked about this a lot at the end of legislative session, but for the next 6 months, the planned 2% increase in the state's gas tax will be suspended. And then also for the folks will get a $50 check if they're an individual earning less than $200,000. The state grocery tax will be suspended for a year. That is a 1% tax on groceries. So it's really you're not gonna see a bunch. In a few weeks, we're gonna see a period of tax suspension on school supplies.
Okay, and Charlie.
A week or so ago, Governor Pritzker signed a new law that will give Illinois motorists additional choices for professional sports team license plates, including for the first time ever, women's professional teams. The new options would include the Chicago Sky, who are the reigning Women's National Basketball Association national champions, and the Chicago Red Stars, a founding member of the Women's Professional Soccer League, and then also the Chicago Fire of Major League Soccer. So in January, they'll join the Bears, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Cubs, and the White Sox on the list of professional sports teams that are available from the Secretary of State. I might also add, I've seen Cardinal plates too. So St. Louis Cardinal fans, you'll have your opportunity also.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Chicago Tonight's Amanda Vinicky. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.